And there's the fanfare. That must mean it's time for our weekly trip to the movies with Matt Olien. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Hi, Craig.
We're going to double dip today. Not only are we going to talk about, I think, one of your favorite shows that you've seen in a while, judging from your media posts, but also we're going to do some Oscar predictions here in just a little bit. But first, the movie, Dune Part 2. Visually stunning, Matt. And you've got everything. You've got politics, religion, and power in this desert planet of Arrakis. What did you think of the movie?
So it's great. I like the first one. Denis Villeneuve is the director, the French-Canadian film director who's, you know, become a very big and important director. Blade Runner 2049, Arrival, Prisoners, and now he's got part two of Dune. We're hoping there's a part three. I think there will be based on the $82.5 million opening weekend. So definitely it's the first big movie of 2024. They released it at just the right time because the Oscar films are siphoning out of theaters. Outside of that, there's just a bunch of crap in theaters like Madame Web, things like that. So it hit the box office just at the right time. This is epic, amazing kind of large-scale filmmaking in the tradition of David Lean, Stanley Kubrick, Francis Ford Coppola, some of the big epic films that they have made that are not only visual epics, but character epics, character-driven. They combine the two, and I think that's what's going on here. Frank Herbert's famed novel Dune is a dark novel. It's got a lot of layers to it. It's much darker than the Star Wars films, I've always felt. A lot of people think it's better. And, of course, the original film back in 1984 that David Lynch directed was a famous disaster. But Villeneuve now has the visual gravitas to pull this off. So there are some amazing sequences. And basically, to catch people up, this picks up where Dune 1 left off, where Timothy Chalamet, who plays Paul Atreides, his house has been wiped out, as you know, from the first film. He's living with the Fremen out in the desert, this desert planet, and he's being pursued by the Baron, played by Stellan Skarsgård. He enlists his psychotic nephew, played by Austin Butler, to go wipe them out, wipe out the Fremen, take care of business, and that's basically part two. Chalamet's character, Paul Atreides, Javier Bardem, who's kind of the leader of the Fremen, thinks he's the Messiah. He thinks this is the guy that's come to save his people so they can live in paradise. So you have a lot of Christian parables, a lot of Christian allegory going on here, Craig. Is he the chosen one? Who is he? He's very modest. Chalamet plays him as a very modest man. I don't want this, etc. Zendaya is in love with him. She's a Fremen. She plays Chani. And that really drives this film too. The love story between Chalamet and Zendaya becomes in part two kind of that Rhett Butler, Scarlett O'Hara, some of the great love stories that we've had on film. It really drives the movie. But there's some visually amazing sequences. There's a sequence where Chalamet rides a sandworm for the first time, and that's a big deal for the Fremen people. How can he do that? He's not us. He's an outsider, and he does it. That's a great visual sequence. There's a phenomenal finale near the end that reminds you of Apocalypse Now meets Lawrence of Arabia. You know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. Huge cast. I mentioned Bardem. Florence Pugh is introduced in this one. Christopher Walken is the Emperor. Lea Seydoux, Charlotte Rampling is back. Rebecca Ferguson as Chalamet's mother. Josh Brolin. So you've got everything going for her. You got a love story. You've got epic filmmaking with great cinematography. You've got also kind of character development that drives this. And if you've read Dune, you know what's going to happen with Paul Atreides. So I'm not going to give that away. But a lot of great films, Craig, have this character switch. Remember Al Pacino in Godfather 1? From the first part of that movie to the end, his character changes 180 degrees. And so just watch for that. And sometimes that kind of drama, even though it's unexpected and maybe not happy, can really drive a movie and give it that extra gravitas that can take it into great territory. So I think it's better than the first film. I was wowed by the visuals. I think Chalamet's character switch and character development is very interesting to watch as he performs this performance. But Zendaya really comes into her own too. This is a really interesting performance by her. She loves Timothy Chalamet. She loves Paul Atreides, his character. Same thing. But she's conflicted as well. And you're going to have to see the movie to find out what I mean. It's setting up probably Dune 3, which will be called Dune 3 Messiah. Great film. First great film of 2024. and should be an Oscar contender later this year.
Before we move on to talk about the upcoming Academy Awards this Sunday, the score, the music in this movie, to me, must add a lot.
Yeah, it does. Now, I've had a couple friends tell me they didn't like the score.
Really?
But I think it is, it's got that, you know, overarching dramatic thing going for it that fuels this movie. But again, I think it's two things, Craig. It's the love story that now is really in fruition between Chani and Paul. And it's also the visuals, the epic. He's in the desert. He's on this planet full of desert. You're constantly reminded of Peter O'Toole in Lawrence of Arabia, who's also an outsider. You know, he comes to help the Arabs fight the Turks. And he's this outsider who becomes part of the desert. And it's very similar. I don't know that Frank Herbert had that in mind when he wrote Dune. He wrote it after Lawrence of Arabia came out. So maybe there's some parallels there. But you're just reminded of this immense challenge that Chalamet has to play this conflicted hero. I would say that's a good way to describe Paul Atreides, a conflicted hero. There's some great showdowns that are coming in this movie. You know, Austin Butler, fresh off his Elvis performance, unrecognizable as the Baron's nephew. And he's evil. He's psychotic. Just buckle up because there's a great showdown coming in this movie. Here we go.
Now let's talk about the Oscars. Before we get your, what I'm sure will be perfect predictions,
well,
let's talk about snubs and surprises first. Who was really snubbed relative to nominations for Oscars?
So I never like to use the word snub. That's a kind of a lazy media term, I always say, for people that don't really follow the Oscars.
Sorry.
No. I didn't mean you. I'm talking about on Oscar nomination morning. That's what the CNNs and the Foxes, and they all use the word snub. I don't think Greta Gerwig was snubbed in the directing category. I think she probably finished sixth. The people who vote, the directors in the Academy, I don't think they have it out for Greta Gerwig. But I think in retrospect, she should have been in the five for sure. This was a strong movie year. Deep, strong. All 10 Best Picture nominees are good. Some are better than others. This is the best movie year since 2019. I think those 3 years in the middle, I'll always call them the COVID years. You had some sketchy films win Best Picture, like Coda, which felt like an after-school special. And so now we're kind of back to this deep, strong movie year, just like 2019 when we had Parasite versus Once Upon a Time in Hollywood versus Sam Mendes' 1917. When you have a strong year like that, people are going to not get in the top five. Gerwig didn't get in. Margot Robbie didn't get nominated for Best Actress as Barbie. And these things are going to happen. There were some supporting actor people like Dominic Sessa in The Holdovers who should have been nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I'd have tossed Robert De Niro out for Killers of the Flower Moon. But that happens. They take a vote. They tally it up, and that's what happens.
Matt, streaming, has it yet really started to impact what we're going to see at the Academy Awards?
I don't know. It did about 5 years ago when Alfonso Cuarón's Roma went to Netflix and was seen by more people than it would have been, you know, a Spanish language film shot in Mexico had it been only in theaters. So that was the first time where I think Cuarón really bought himself an Oscar for an overrated movie, and Roma was overrated. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, Maestro went right to Netflix. I think people are seeing these movies, but going right to Netflix or Apple is not a guarantee that you're going to win an Oscar.
We're visiting with Matt Olien. He's our weekly critic here at Prairie Public. Gives us great insight to the movies. Matt, who's going to win Best Picture?
Oppenheimer. It's a done deal. It's won everything leading up to this. It got the BAFTAs. It got the Producers Guild Award. That's a key indicator. If you win the Producers Guild Award, you're going to win Best Picture. Now, the only reason I will say that this is not 100% lock is because of the ranking system. The way Oscar voters vote for Best Picture, Craig, is different than they vote for the other categories. For Best Picture, they're told to rank the 10 movies in order, and then they tally up the points. In the old days, it used to be just check the winner.
Is 10 movies too many?
Maybe. And I think 5 is too small for directing, lead actor, and lead actress. So maybe somewhere in the middle. So because of this ranking system, that's how Coda won. That's how Coda beat Power of the Dog and Licorice Pizza 2 years ago, because those two movies were polarizing movies. Some people loved them, some people hated them. So on one ballot, Power of the Dog might finish first. On another ballot, ninth. So I don't see that happening with Oppenheimer. I think most Oscar voters view it as a great movie with a transformative lead performance by Cillian Murphy. I don't see Oppenheimer falling any lower than fourth or fifth on a lot of these ballots. So I think it's going to win. Christopher Nolan will get the director Oscar, his first one for Oppenheimer. I think Oppenheimer wins 2 acting awards. Cillian Murphy will edge out Paul Giamatti for best actor. And it looks like Robert Downey Jr. will be an Oscar winner at long last, edging out Ryan Gosling for Barbie, who I'd be okay if he won. And I see Oppenheimer winning cinematography, sound, film editing, a music score. So I think it's going to win 8 Oscars, which gets it into rarefied air all time. 11 is the record set by Ben-Hur, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, and Titanic. So I think it wins 8 awards. I think Barbie wins 2.
Which one might Barbie win?
Song and costumes. I thought it was going to win production design. Now I'm going to say Poor Things gets production design because it's all amazingly done with the production design. I think Lily Gladstone wins Best Actress for Killers of the Flower Moon. I think Emma Stone should win for Poor Things. However, Gladstone is good in the movie. It's not the main performance. DiCaprio's moronic Ernest is the main performance in another overrated movie, I think. Not Scorsese's best, but I think Lily's going to win. And it's a great story. She was raised on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation in Montana, and now she's going to be an Oscar winner. And Divine Joy Randolph is going to get supporting actors for The Holdovers. Screenplay is going to be interesting. Original screenplay, I'm hoping for The Holdovers, but I think Anatomy of a Fall is going to win. And for adapted screenplay, I think American Fiction's going to win, but it shouldn't.
Are there any changes to the ceremony itself this year, Matt, that we should watch for?
So tune in an hour early. A couple things to remember. We set our clocks ahead Sunday morning.
Yes, we do.
So be careful of that. And the Oscars start at 6 p.m. Central. So you're almost losing 2 hours here. They're going to start an hour earlier, and you're going to lose an hour from the daylight savings time. So 6 p.m. Central means everyone's going to be in bed by 9:30. I remember as a kid watching it with my dad. It would go to like 11:30. It was crazy how long it would be. It would start at 8 p.m. And now they really want to get people off to bed by 10 p.m. Central, and they're going to give it their best shot to do that.
Who's hosting the Academy Awards?
Jimmy Kimmel.
All right, Matt, you ready for some trivia?
Let's do it.
Let's have you guess 3 of the top 5 movies relative to the most nominations they have received for the Academy Awards.
All About Eve had 14 nominations. That was the record holder for a long time, 1950. Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, did that get 14 nominations?
It did not. It got 13, but 13. It is in the top 5.
Okay.
2 other movies.
Oppenheimer has 13. That's in the top 5, right?
That's correct. 2 other movies have 14 nominations,
I know.
Matt.
I'm going to get this. Schindler's List?
No.
No? This is in recent years, isn't it?
Yes. Well, recent in our lives.
I'm just kind of gapping. Amadeus have 14?
La La Land, one of them.
La La Land, that's right. I would have not come up with that 14.
Now,
what's the other one?
Titanic,
okay.
We'll all be watching on Sunday night. We've been to the movies with Matt Olien.